All right. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Ian.
I really enjoyed that worship. Something about singing it as well. Kind of turns your heart right to, you know, the Lord and what he's done. It's very, very good. We're going to carry on. Actually, very special welcome to the Grahams back with us. You'll have to give us a big, what's it been, about a year and a half since you left or so? No, we want to hear every single thing that's happened in that 18 months. Yeah, in 1:30. That's very good. And a special welcome to my special niece, Tamara. Yeah, we had a celebration for her 21st on Friday, so that was very, very cool. There's about five of us kind of sharing the one birthday celebration, so when it came to singing happy birthday, it would have been a lot easier just to actually say excluding and basically just the people that weren't having a birthday, but that's all right. Mostly for Tammy, 21. That's pretty cool. All right, so we've been doing a series through the heroes of the faith in Hebrews 11, and we're going to carry on this morning. Last time we looked at Abraham, how he was called out from the country of his birth, and he was called to a country that he didn't even know where he was going. So today we're gonna look at Sarah. Sarah also was you know called out from a country of her birth by faith, came to another country, and then by faith, obviously, married a Lati and had four kids. Oh, wait a minute. No, sorry. A lot of faith. A tremendous amount of faith. And patience. Yeah. Needed all the fruit of the Spirit, really. Yeah. Actually, no. There's a slim chance it's a different Sarah this morning. I mean... May have to fire my sermon writer. Looks like he's mixed up the Sarahs. Anyway. All right, so we're going to talk about Abraham's wife, Sarah. She's mentioned in Hebrews 11 in the Hall of Faith, if you like. So we're going to start in Hebrews 11, but most of it's going to be from Genesis. And there's kind of, it's really an overview of Sarah's life. But we'll concentrate on three main areas. And one thing that I really liked, obviously Sarah's story is totally intertwined with Abraham for obvious reasons. But one thing I liked about reading these stories once again was just, I guess, their humanity that actually comes out in these stories. And what I mean by their humanity is basically their mistakes. It was actually quite refreshing in a way. We've been looking at some of the sort of these giants of the faith, you know, Enoch, who walked with God for 365 years and so pleased God that God said, right, I want you to be with me. And he just took him, you know, and you think, wow, Enoch is like this giant, you know, and then Noah, who was righteous and just in his time, 70 plus years, of just faithfully doing what God had called him to do. And you just think, again, what a giant of the faith. And sometimes you kind of think, you look at your own life and you think, oh, not sure if I can even really approach them and say hi when we're in heaven kind of thing, because they just seem right up there. They're like, they've got no mistakes and flaws. But actually, when you get to Abraham and Sarah, you actually see all of it. Yes, you see this faith that prevails, which is the most important thing, but you actually see their times of doubt and confusion and all the little things that they went through in their journey. So we're going to basically focus on three different things to do with Sarah, three little parts of her story. One, the main thing that starts off is actually to do with her beauty. So we'll have a look at a story around that. And then it's her barrenness, which is kind of the overall theme or story of her life, really, overcoming that through God. And then her blessing at the end, when God comes through. So anyway, have a look at Hebrews 11. just a couple of verses from here in verses 11 and 12. Verse 11, it says, "By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. And therefore also there was born of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore." If you've got an NIV, it actually says in verse 11, "by faith Abraham," even though he was past age. It's actually not a very good translation in that particular verse, and the NIV changed it when they brought out their 2011 version. I just thought I'd say that just in case you're reading it and you're thinking, "Yeah, no, this is about Abraham." Basically every other version, it's "by faith Sarah herself." It's about Sarah.
In that same sentence, it does say, "and Sarah herself."
Right, okay. And then, so Sarah's the first female that's basically mentioned in this hall of faith. There is another female. Does anyone know who else is mentioned? Rahab, yeah. And obviously this is not a complete list of, you know, all the those that walked by faith. It's mainly just sort of looking at Genesis. If we were going to extend this to the Old Testament, what other females, what other women do you think you would add to the list?
Deborah,
yeah.
I'm lucky not to be there.
Yeah.
My Deborah.
Right. Yeah. You like your Deborah, yeah. Deborah and Judges led Israel.
Ruth.
Yeah, Ruth is amazing. Yeah. Your people will be my people, your God my people. Yeah, Esther. "If I perish, I perish." She had to go before the king, stepping out in faith on behalf of the whole nation of the Jews who had the death sentence hung over them. Yeah, I marked down those ones. Also, I thought of Hannah, who had to just sort of persevere through all this mocking, but in faith held on to the fact that God could actually bless her, even though she was barren. We'll actually talk about that a little bit later. Yeah, so you have all these prominent women. But Sarah's the one that we're talking about this morning. And it says here that they were as good, well, talking about Abraham, it says, as good as dead. You know, in terms of having a child, as good as dead. Abraham was 100 when that child came. Sarah was 90. Certainly getting on a little bit. All right, so let's just have a look at the first little part of her life that we're going to look at. Sort of, it's a story. It's in Genesis chapter 12. So it's basically picking up exactly from where we left off with Abraham last time. So the start of chapter 12, like we talked about last time, is this: the Lord appears to Abraham and calls him forth from the country of his birth. "Follow me, come into this country that I'll show you. I'll make you great. I'll make your name great." At this time, Sarah was 65 years old. And she's obviously having to step into the unknown as well. You know, a lot of the time we just focus on Abraham, but right at Abraham's right hand side, is Sarah having to step out in faith with him. And they get into the promised land and they encounter sort of like their first little trial. And it's kind of like, well, how are they going to react? Are they going to carry on walking in the same faith that they stepped out in when God called them? What's going to happen? So we'll read from verse 10 in Genesis 12. It says, "Now there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came about when he came near to Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, 'See now, I know that you're a beautiful woman, and it will come about when the Egyptians see you that they will say, "This is his wife," and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say that you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you.' And it came about when Abram came into Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. And Pharaoh's officials said and praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Therefore, he treated Abraham well for her sake and gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female servants and female donkeys and camels. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abraham's wife. And then Pharaoh called Abraham and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my own wife? Now then, here is your wife, take her and go." And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they escorted him away, and his wife, and all that belonged to him. Have you heard the saying that she's so beautiful, it'll only lead to trouble? Hopefully not, because I just made that saying up. But if there was such a saying, we could apply it to this story of Abraham and his beautiful wife, Sarai, or Sarah. You know, there is a saying that we say that looks can kill. We kind of use it in a different context to this, but this is how Abraham was thinking. He was thinking that Sarai's looks could actually kill him. And so he comes up with a little bit of a plan. You know, in Scripture, what is Egypt a picture of? The world? Yep. So here they are, basically, in their first trial. There's a famine in the Promised Land where God's called them to be. But that is where God's called them to be. And instead, they go on down to Egypt, where it's more prosperous. So this whole little picture here is kind of imagery of what Christians and believers can do as well, when they sort of look to the prosperity of the world when things get hard in the Christian life, when the call and the path of God is difficult, and they start looking back. And you probably know examples of people that have done that. You may have done that in your own life. That's kind of what this whole picture is about. And what is, obviously it doesn't work out very well. They get into a little bit of strife, and Abraham tries to come up with a plan. You know, what does the flesh try to do when it comes into pressure and trial? It always tries to sort of wiggle out of it some way. So, you know, it tries to find somehow I can get out of this. And Abraham's plan is to actually to get Sarah to say that she's his sister. Is that true?
Partly.
Partly? Yeah, she was actually a half-sister. But it's a half-lie. It's half-truth and it's a half-lie. And the purpose of it was still to deceive, was it not? And you see that Abraham was really mainly thinking about himself. Like he actually said in verse 13, he said, "Say that you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you." So, yeah, it was going to go hopefully well for Abraham, but what about Sarah? What about his wife? All right. And the story obviously doesn't end very well. He basically gets his visa revoked, and he's on the first plane out of there. They escort him out of Egypt once Pharaoh, you know, understands how he's been deceived. He's deported in disgrace. And not really without, you know, first getting a bit of an arm wave and a finger point and a bit of a tongue lashing about it, what he's done. And you kind of always know that if the world is actually correcting the believer in things of like morality and how you're living your life, then you know that something is definitely wrong. But anyway, one thing that this little story does highlight is just the beauty of Sarah. Okay, it wasn't that she was just a 10 in Abraham's eyes. It wasn't that he was a biased home judge, if you like. As soon as the Egyptians saw her, they thought, wow. You know, they told Pharaoh's officials, they thought, wow, pass it on to Pharaoh. So you've got this whole sort of theme of Sarah's beauty. And she was 65 at this time. Don't get jealous, ladies. I think in that day, facelifts and Botox didn't really happen until about 120. The average age back here was probably around 150 to 160. So her being 65 in today's kind of estimates is probably in her like early 30s, something like that. So she was probably in her prime. But when we get to the New Testament, just talking about her beauty, actually I'll just read out one thing that Peter says, because he uses Sarah as an example. And he just says this, he says that beauty should be that of the inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way that the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to make themselves beautiful. So he's basically saying, you know, what God actually looks at is the beauty that's within. You know, man looks on the outside, God's looking at the heart. All right, let's have a look at the next little story that Sarah is mentioned in. And it's in Genesis 16. So we'll read, basically 10 years has gone on now. They're back in Israel, back in the promised land. 10 years has gone on. And obviously no child yet. God's given us a promise of a child. Nothing has happened. And so we'll read verses 1 to 5. It says, "Now Sarai, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid, perhaps I shall obtain children through her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. After Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Abram's wife Sarah took Hagar, the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband, Abram, as his wife. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her sight. And Sarai said to Abram, may the wrong done to me be upon you. I gave my maid into your hands, but when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her sight. And may the Lord judge between you and me." So we looked firstly briefly at her beauty, but it's really her barrenness that is kind of like the story that is over her whole life. And God's done that, obviously, for a particular reason. When Sarah is first mentioned in Genesis 11, it says that Abraham's wife was Sarah. And then it says, but Sarah was barren. She had no child. So right from the very start, that's fairly much the stamp that's on her record, on her account. And try as she couldn't have a child. And this was a massive thing back then. I mean, you know, it's bad enough in today's society if you really want to have a child and aren't able to. But back then, it was seen as a disgrace. Because the woman was meant to raise up a son, you know, so that the family name would carry on and continue within the tribe. Some even saw it as a curse of God upon the woman. So it was a really difficult thing. And Sarah, right from the very start, you know, she had wanted and tried to have children, but she couldn't. And we get 10 years on here, and obviously she's starting to think, well, maybe that's not going to happen. I'm 75, we've been trying, nothing. As a side little issue, it's actually quite interesting to note the barren women in the Bible, because they have things in common. Can anyone think of who are some of the other the barren women in the Bible?
Hannah.
Hannah, yeah. Who else?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth in the New Testament. And Rachel.
Rebecca.
Yeah. I think I only noted down one other one. That was Manoah's wife, who Fraser was talking about when they gave birth to Samson. All of these women, what they have in common is, in the most part, they are godly women following the Lord, and yet they can't have children, and they have this long period of waiting where it's actually really, really difficult. And yet the other thing they have in common is that when God actually opens their womb and allows them to have children, it's somebody really special. It's always someone special. You know, Sarah and Abraham, they have Isaac, you know, one of the patriarchs of Israel, Rebecca and Isaac. Rebecca couldn't have children, but when she finally did, out came Jacob and Esau. Special people. Rachel and, oh, sorry, I said that one. Manoah had Samson. Hannah, when she finally gives birth, you know, she's struggling with the whole time. She's getting mocked by Peninnah, I think it is, the wife, and you know, she says, "Lord, if you give me a child, I'll dedicate him back to you." And it's, you know, it's Samuel. He's a giant in Israel's history. There's always someone really important. Elizabeth and Zacharias had gotten to an old age, but you know, the Lord finally brings forth the promise, and it's John the Baptist, you know, the one that'll prepare the way for the Lord. And it's kind of like there's a principle here that if God has promised something, or if we're having to wait for him for something, that he often goes above and beyond. You know, he often blesses when he calls us to wait a long time for something. Seems to be a bit of a principle. So I guess getting back to just this little story, just in terms of Sarah's life, you can imagine she would have started to doubt. Really, at the start, when the promise came through Abraham that God was going to give him a child, she would have thought, amazing, you know, like I'm finally going to have this child. 10 years goes on, nothing's happened. You can imagine her sort of saying to Abraham, like, did he specifically say the child would come through me? You know, did you kind of get the impression that the child, you know, would be mine as well? And when you read the accounts up until this stage, the fact is that God didn't actually, he came to Abraham a couple of times, but not once did he actually mention Sarah. That was his plan, but he didn't actually specifically say the child would be Sarah's. He does a little bit later on. But you can imagine her starting to, the confusion and doubt. And that's the same with us. When God's given us a promise and we're waiting for something, but quite often you don't see it straight away. And, you know, the doubts and the confusion starts to rise. And so obviously they take matters into their own hands. They come up with a plan. The flesh likes to try to come up with some way out of this. And they think that if they take Hagar, Sarah's maid, maybe Abraham can have a child through her. Hagar was an Egyptian. Most scholars believe that she came back with Abraham and Sarah when they did that little sojourn down into Egypt that we read about earlier. So you sort of see the stories and the implications of, you know, those missteps working their way out through this story. So I started thinking about, okay, so what kind of little points can we take from this, even from our own lives? Firstly, just fairly much like I said before, when God gives us a promise, maybe it's for our own life, maybe it's for like a loved one, maybe it's the salvation or someone, because sometimes God specifically says things like that to us. Quite often, you can see the complete opposite in the short term. It doesn't matter, it doesn't mean that the promise isn't going to happen, but you know, God does test our faith through these things. I think I've said this, or I know I've said this before, but very briefly, I remember Fraser, when he was a teenager, far from the Lord, doing bad things. That makes it sound really bad. But anyway, Mum received a word from the Lord where she heard God calling Fraser. And it was so strong that Mum thought, he's not even my son. He's actually God's son. You know, so that's how strong it was. And, you know, Mum's as I phrase his mother, obviously. And they had this promise, and you kind of thought it's going to happen straight away. Here we are, 30 years on, we're still waiting for him to be saved. No, it took about 6 years, and then that promise actually came to fruition. But in the short term, it didn't look anything like it. It actually kind of went the opposite way. But the promise of God was still true. The other thing I was just thinking about is that that God often makes us wait longer than we actually like. And I don't think we like waiting at all. You know, he doesn't do that to be horrible, but to actually strengthen our faith. We don't like to sort of stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. We like to sort of be trying to work out some way out of our little predicament. There's a kind of a wise old brethren writer, just goes by initials CHM, and he states, he said, the poor heart naturally prefers anything to the attitude of waiting. It will turn to any expedient, any scheme, any resource, rather than be kept in that posture. It is one thing to believe a promise at the first, and quite another to wait quietly for the accomplishment thereof. So he's basically saying the human heart just hates having to wait. Doesn't like it one little bit. The other thing I just thought about in terms of the story is that we shouldn't make it sound like the Christian life is just completely passive. It's not just always just waiting what's going to happen kind of thing. You know, God in lots of ways asks us to actually step out. And sometimes, you know, us doing nothing is just can be just through fear. You know, that we're sort of paralyzed by fear and we don't actually want to do anything. So what is important, whether we're called to wait or whether we're called to act, is that what we're doing is done through faith. And that was what the problem was here. Abraham and Sarah, they just thought, hey, here's a plan, let's just do it. And it wasn't done in faith, it wasn't done, it was like trying to help the Lord out, but they didn't consult the Lord in any way in the process. Let's just do it. And the implications of what they did, you know, basically having an Ishmael, are massive. You know, we're 4,000 years on, and the descendants of Ishmael and the descendants of Jacob and Isaac are still at war, still fighting, still bickering today, just like we had in this passage right from the very start, conflict and bickering. The other thing I just wanted to briefly mention is that Paul, when he talks about Sarah and Hagar in the New Testament, he actually says that they are actually pictures of two different covenants. He says that Hagar is basically a picture of Mount Sinai or the law, man having to do something for God, whereas Sarah is a picture of grace, believing the promise, not actually working as such. And he brings out how our salvation is, you know, through accepting the promise of God through faith. All right, let's have a look at the blessing of Sarah. So we looked at her beauty, the barrenness, but let's have a look at how it ends up. Turn over just one chapter to chapter 17. Another 14 years has gone on. So 14 more years of probably waiting, but probably by this stage they'd given up complete hope. Sarah had probably given up complete hope that that she would ever have a child, and they probably just thought that Ishmael is going to be the one that God's going to bless. Sarah's now 89, Abraham's 99, Ishmael's 14. And in chapter 17 of Genesis, God comes again and reestablishes the covenant with Abraham. And for the first time, he actually mentions Sarah's role in this covenant. If you have a look in verse 15, it says, "Then God said to Abraham, 'As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. And I will bless her, and indeed I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations, and kings of peoples shall come from her.'" And then Abraham fell on his face and he laughed and he said in his heart, will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? It's basically the first of three laughs, if you like. So God, first of all, he says that I'm going to change her name. Hitchcock's Bible names, I sort of looked it up, it said Sarai means my princess, and it had Sarah as princess of the multitude. So if that's right, God was basically saying that Sarai is going to go from my princess, just Abraham's princess, to basically a princess of the multitude. She's going to be like a mother of the nation through whom I'll bring forth the promised son. And Bible teachers and scholars are a little bit divided as to what kind of laugh Abraham did here. Whether it was a kind of, I'm 100 years old, sure that's going to happen. Whether it was a laugh a little bit in unbelief, or it was a laugh more in like, wow, you know, like I'm 100 years old and you're telling me I'm going to have a child. I'm going to have a child at 100? Sort of more of a wonder and awe. People are divided. They're not quite sure which one. He was obviously showing a complete surprise. I think it's probably more slight. He just couldn't, you know, believe that this was actually going to happen. A little bit of shock. In the New Testament, it says this. It maybe favors the second option. It says, without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and that Sarah's womb was also dead. Yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened in his faith and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he had promised. And this is why it was credited to him as righteousness. So that emphasizes the fact that he didn't waver. As a little side note, I asked Mum the other day, can you name two women in the Bible whose age is given? And she said, well, you know, it's obviously Sarah. And then obviously there's Sarah. And if you actually go through all the sort of prominent women in the Bible, Sarah's the only one whose age is given. I mean, it's just a side note. But it doesn't say how old Rebecca or Ruth or Esther or Elizabeth or Mary or anything was.
Women don't like to say their age.
I was going to say, maybe that's because, yeah, you never ask a woman their age. But I think the reason that Sarah is, her age is given is because it's trying to emphasize that this was just a supernatural work of God. I mean, she was so old it just could not happen in terms of bringing forth a child. It had to be God. There's no other explanation for it. All right, so we had basically the first of three laughs here. Abraham laughs, kind of just laughs in his heart. If we turn over to chapter 18, Sarah is involved in verse 9. So the Lord is still speaking to Abraham. And in verse 9, it says, then they said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? And he said, there, in the tent. And he, it's the Lord, said, I will surely return to you at this time next year. And behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. And Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I've become old, shall I also have pleasure, my Lord also being old? And the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I indeed bear a child when I am so old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you, at this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. Sarah denied it, however, saying, I did not laugh. But she was afraid, and he said, no, but you did laugh. So Sarah thought that she could, I don't know, she wasn't probably trying to pull the wool over the Lord's eyes here, but you know how like when the flesh, sometimes you just get put on the spot and you're under like a little bit of pressure and stress, the flesh can actually come forth with a lie straight away. No, I didn't do it. And then you think, oops. And I think this is kind of what it was with Sarah here. Oh, no, I didn't laugh. And the Lord's, you laughed. I was like, yeah, I laughed. Yeah, okay, sorry. You got me. But you kind of see this humanity of Abraham and Sarah. Just their initial reaction was, this is crazy. It can't be true. But it doesn't stop the Lord doing what he's going to do. And it's the same with us. You know, we have all these confusions. We have all these doubts. We have all these missteps. Thankfully, the Lord knows that we are but dust, basically, and that he will still work through us. And obviously in this story, like, faith still has to prevail. Because even in Hebrews, that very first verse that we started with, remember it again, it says, by faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. So even though she had this initial little period of, that's not going to happen. I'm well past it. She still then had to think, well, wait a minute. If the Lord has said it, then he will do it. And faith rose in her heart. And then she conceived. If you turn over again to chapter 21, we'll just see the fulfillment of this. Because the Lord gets her to laugh again. Chapter 21, it says, then the Lord took note of Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. So finally, you know, after all that time, like I said before, this stamp of barrenness was over her life right from the very start. And she had to wait and wait and wait and wait. But God came through. And God blessed her in this way. And God got her to laugh. This is not a laugh of unbelief. This is a laugh of joy and of wonder. And she said that everyone who basically hears the story is going to laugh with her. Everyone's going to be happy with her. Everyone's going to be amazed at what God has done for her. But God's turned that laughter of unbelief into a laughter of joy. And God, I think, has a little bit of a laugh in this as well, because he wants the son to be called Isaac. And that Isaac means he laughs. And so God's kind of reminding them about, you remember when I told you you're going to have a child, even in your last age, and then both of you actually laughed. But here he is, you know, and I'll turn your laughter into the laughter of joy.
He who laughs, laughed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So how awesome, you know, to see Sarah, 90 years old, kind of radiant, I guess, with the joy and having this little promised child. After all the confusion, all the despair and barrenness and all the doubt. But faith prevailed. I'll probably conclude, but I'll just say three little things pretty briefly that I sort of thought about as I read through the story. First of all, I just kind of thought we are like Sarah in that we are barren. You know, we can't produce, spiritually speaking. You know, when it comes for salvation, you know, what could we produce that we could give to the Lord to say, hey, look at this, save me? The fact is that humanity is completely barren. You know, and it takes the Lord to actually do something miraculous in our lives. And that's what he has done for each and every one of us. We give it a go to try to produce little works. We come up with little Ishmaels. The church is full of Ishmaels, you know, that turn out to be anything but a blessing, turn out to be the opposite. The church has all of its little programs and gimmicks and things that they're going to help out the Lord with. And really, it's just fleshly efforts, Ishmaels. But when God does something, it's truly wonderful. And it's not just, obviously, for salvation. I mean, Jesus said it. He said, even as Christians, you know, if you abide in me, you'll bear much fruit. But he said, without me, you can do nothing. So he basically said, without me, you're barren. You can't produce a single thing. But, you know, God is the one, and this is what this whole story is about, who actually gives life to the dead. He's the one who brings fruit to the barren, makes the nobodies into somebodies. That's what the story is about. The second thing I was just thinking about very briefly is that I just like it in the Old Testament when it talks about this. It says, in hope, against hope, Abraham believed. You know, and you could say this exactly the same thing for Sarah. In hope, against hope, Sarah believed. Meaning, in hope, that's the hope that comes by knowing the Lord Jesus Christ. Against hope, that's natural hope. They believed. Meaning, even when, because we get into situations and you look, oh, what's going to happen here? And from a natural point of view, the hope can be completely gone. But there's always God when you bring him into the situation. And then just finally, the last thing I just wanted to say is that I actually quite like how the New Testament leaves out all the missteps of Abraham and Sarah. When you read the New Testament, you don't really hear all the stuff that I've sort of been talking about this morning, just, you know, the doubts and confusions and the Ishmaels and all that. It actually, basically, it's like when you're panning for gold. You know, you may have some tiny little nuggets in there, but you've got a lot of, you know, dirt and sludge and slime and yucky stuff. You know, but they keep sort of sifting it, and out comes just the little things that they're looking for. The Old Testament is kind of like, it's showing you everything. It's showing you the mess ups, the dirt, but it's showing you the little nuggets that are there as well. And then you get to the New Testament and you've just got basically these precious materials and golds that come forth. And I think the reason it does that is because it's a little picture of what it's going to be like at the judgment seat of Christ. When all of our little doubts, all of our little missteps, that's basically just called wood, hay and stubble, and it goes up in the flames. It's burnt. It's never ever going to exist ever again. No one's ever going to know anything really about it. It's going to be gone. And what God brings forth is just what it says, those precious stones, the gold, the silver, costly stones, it says. The little times in our life where we really trusted the Lord, really stepped out, really obeyed him, just whatever we've been called to do, the faithfulness in doing that. So that'll be good. At the moment, we see all the sludge in our own lives. But yeah, he's going to bring forth that which is just done through the fruit here, what's done through his son. All right, so we'll leave it there. So that's part of Sarah's story. Faith prevailing over great odds. So I'll just pray, and then if anyone's got any thoughts, that'll be good. Father, I thank you that despite these little missteps that Abraham and Sarah did, Lord, you blessed them. You remained faithful to them. And Lord, their faith, though they had doubts, prevailed in the end. And Father, we can read their story and we can relate our lives to their lives. And we can see some of these things in our lives. But we thank you that you're a God who loves us and cares for us. And Father, just help us. Help us to bring you into the decisions that we make and the paths that we walk in and the life that we lead. And we just pray, Lord, that there would be that gold to some degree that would come forth from our life. In whatever way, Lord, that you have gifted us and called us to do. Father, may we walk by faith. May we be faithful. We just bless you again this day. In Jesus' name, amen.